Hello again and welcome to I've Got a Beatles podcast with Dave and Chris, and I'm feeling pretty bluesy right now after that introduction. I don't know, are you even feeling pretty bluesy yourself?
Yeah.
You're doing a little air guitar here.
Air guitar solo here. It's pretty
Pretty rocking.
Guitar on that, pretty rocking guitar.
Yeah, and so you may be wondering, well, that didn't sound like the Beatles, and so your next thought would be, aha, it must be time for another installment of Apple Scruffs, because
we
are back with number 3 in our series. We've talked about Badfinger.
A limited series.
Yes, that's right.
At some point, we're going to be out.
Yes. So we covered Badfinger, and then we did James Taylor, and we thought we'd change things up a little bit here with someone who, a lot. If you're a classic rock fan, you've heard her voice before, but you may not know who she is or the fact that she had a pretty good association with the Beatles. And that's Doris Troy, who is the subject of today's episode.
Yeah, Doris had a big hit in the early 60s called Just One Look. If you remember that song, Just One Look. She was featured as a backup singer on two pretty particularly famous albums. One being the Pink Floyd album, Dark Side of the Moon. There's that song with a bunch of just a bunch of vocals,
sort of quasi orgasmic, wouldn't you say? Kind of, the Great Gig in the Sky, I believe, is the tune on that. And then you can also hear her on You Can't Always Get What You Want, singing background vocals by the Rolling Stones. So she had a pretty good run of things. But if you notice, the Beatles, Rolling Stones, Pink Floyd, all three share the same nationality. They're British bands and English bands. So she did much better in England than she did in the U.S., even though she was American. But this album, it's pretty interesting. It was released in September 11th, 1970 in the U.K. and November 9th in 1970 in the U.S. And it's just called Doris Troy. And the producers on the album are Doris Troy and George Harrison, who had a big involvement with this album. And think back, how did Doris Troy even come about here? How did she get to meet George, and how did she meet the Beatles at all?
Part of it is just that she's real big in Britain. And I guess when she, there's a little snippet of a write-up about this album on the Apple Records website, which I implore you to take a look at. And I guess she says when Doris got off the plane in London, there was a red carpet and there were kids screaming.
Wow.
So pretty widely known.
Supposedly, George Harrison was one of her big heroes, along with people like James Brown and Billy Preston and a lot of the great soul singers of the 60s. So she was asked to drop by at Billy Preston's album that he was recording with George Harrison. And, George was a big fan and said, "Hey, what are you doing?" And next thing you know, she's got an office.
Yeah, she's like, "I don't know."
I don't know.
She's like, "Do you want a record contract?"
Yeah.
Like, really?
Yep.
And she's like, yeah. She was surprised that the Beatles listened to her stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
And George said he listened. Well, yeah, we listen to it all the time. You free?
Yeah. What are you doing?
Sure, I'm free. Let's do it. Yeah. Let's record an album. All right. Pretty easy, huh?
It was pretty easy.
That's how it works.
I wish it was that easy nowadays to get a contract, just walk into someone's office and just be there by chance. So, but yeah, that's pretty much how it happened. And all of a sudden, all these really great people are popping in to play on the album that we're going to hear and we'll talk about. But it started out with this core of Billy Preston and George and Doris Troy. And she was given, like you're saying, the red carpet rolled out. She really got everything she wanted for this album. She got an office, an Apple. She had money. She had all the musicians, great songwriters.
Yeah, they say like in Apple Records, if you wanted something, you'd just ask for it and they would just deliver it. So
yeah,
it was let's get the most expensive possible Hammond organ in here tomorrow, and then it would just be there. Obviously, Apple executives not being famous for
Fiscal restraint.
Fiscal restraint. So,
yeah,
you know, like, hey, can we get every great musician there is in the at the time to play on this record? Sure.
Yep. No cost is no issue. Time, no issue. All of that. So that's basically how it ran. So they recorded it in September 69 and finished up in the spring of 1970 and had all these people that we're going to mention here. So,
yeah, the first and foremost, obviously, George producing and playing on it. And second and also foremost, and I guess they, Doris and Ringo were real friendly.
Mm-hmm.
They became real good buddies. She just really liked working with him, thought he was like real nice guy, and
yeah,
obviously he plays very well on this album too.
And if you take a look, I will you know, go through it, but if you look just on the personnel list, it reads like a who's who of great rock musicians at that time. You've got Doris on vocals and piano, George on guitar, Klaus Voormann, of course big sideman of the Beatles, on bass, Ringo on drums, Billy Preston on piano and organ, Stephen Stills, yes, yeah. The Stephen Stills, on guitar and piano and sings background. Got Peter Frampton? Yes.
That's right.
Peter Frampton on guitar. He takes a couple of great solos, too. He was really young, 19 yeah. years old. Alan White, who played with Yes and played with John Lennon. Eric Clapton. Delaney and Bonnie, Leon Russell. I mean, it just goes on and on here.
Yeah. Rita Coolidge.
Yeah.
Ground vocals.
I know. It's like everybody. So, you know, before we get into the album, just kind of the question that I want to have you answer after we go through this, and maybe our, you know, if you're listening, you can weigh in too. This seems like a surefire formula for a hit, yeah. right? I mean, you've got everybody here, famous people. Doris is a great singer. But if you look at the charting, the album failed to chart in Britain or America and just kind of went under the radar. So I'm kind of curious at the end of this, why do you think that happened? And we'll see as we go through the songs, maybe that'll become evident.
Yeah, I think the songs usually tell the tale. A mixture of the songs and just like Apple's promotional
yeah.
kind of people, I don't think were very good on any of the... I mean, the James Taylor album didn't really skyrocket him to fame. That
no. album, even though that we thought there were some pretty good songs on there, and
yeah,
it held together.
A big hit.
Yeah.
As well, I just think the Apple. That's a part of it. That's part of the answer.
Yeah.
Apple promotions probably were pretty poor.
Yes.
The only album that seemed to really do something is the Badfinger thing.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else sort of probably did worse than it should have.
Yeah, really so hit or miss.
That's part of it. But I think part of it, too, will be answered after we go through all these
yes.
songs.
So let's start things off, then. What's the first tune? It was supposedly the big hit here. It was the single.
Yep, the big single called Ain't That Cute.
Don't have no spokes, don't really stand up at all. Each
Yeah, it ain't that cute. It's a pretty peppy opener. A lot of guitar playing on there from George. I could definitely hear some Harrison guitar licks for sure. I don't know. It leaves me a little lacking. There's something missing.
Well, I think the lyrically, it is a little too cute.
Ah.
If you ask me. Like there's a lyric in there, bring in their horse to tea. It's just some very awkward kind of, I mean, typical George Harrison.
Yeah.
Slightly awkward lyrics there. I think the background music's great, but it's just, she's a little hidden.
Yeah.
She gets a little lost in the shuffle vocally. That repairs itself sort of in the second half of this album, but.
Well, that's part of the problem, I think. Yeah, the arrangement of this album, there's maybe, in a way, because there's so many famous people and so many great musicians, that George, as producer, really wanted to make use of them all.
Yeah.
And so it becomes so busy, there's just so much happening, that the vocals kind of get under the radar a little bit.
Yeah, there's just this reminds me of a lot of these 70s albums we've been talking about, especially the George albums.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of horns and a lot of, you know, the old, like we called it, the Saturday Night Live 1975 sound.
Yeah.
So it's like a whole big thing. It's not necessarily a bad thing always. Yeah. But in this case and on these, we'll hear this a lot. Mm-hmm. And these tracks, that there's just, I mean, the playing is great.
Yeah.
But it's just sort of, okay, shrugging shoulders.
Well, and I'll tell you, the reaction, I know we'll go on to the next tune, but the reaction, when I first heard that, you know, this album, and I thought, oh, Doris Troy's voice is so powerful on those other songs we mentioned, like the Pink Floyd song and her background vocals, but I don't feel it on a lot of these really up-tempo songs on this album. I feel like she's just drowned out trying to, you know, stay above water.
And I could not agree with you more.
Yeah.
I think that's the major failing of the album, is that they don't... What do you want to do if you're trying to make somebody a big star? You want to feature them.
Right.
You want them to be the focus of the album. The focus of the first half of this album is definitely, oh, we got a great guitarist and bass player, and the bass could not be left. Listen in this next track, and you'll hear a lot of bass.
Yes,
and it's good bass playing.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it's bad playing, but it's just she just gets lost in the wash on all of these early songs. And let's go
into the next one. So the next tune was by one of those guys who just happened to drop by. He was recording his own album at the time, and that's Stephen Stills of Crosby, Stills and Nash. And let's listen to his song called Special Care.
Well, it's kind of the same. Special Care, I sort of thought the keyboards are real good in it.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, kind of forgettable.
Yeah.
But very, very, very lively. This is the big thing. All three songs we've heard is basically the same tempo, same sort of lively type energy songs. So the arrangement here is like those three songs.
Yep.
Because the next track is Give Me Back My Dynamite. So it's like those three songs. And so then you want something different, and you don't get it. Mm-hmm. You get another fast one, another real peppy songs.
Horn-driven.
Yeah. It's like they sort of blew us away with like five or six of these in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And we could have used some of these other tracks that appear on the second side of the album that really feature Doris's vocals earlier, I think.
Right. Yeah, Special Care, it's kind of catchy, and it sounds very much like a Stephen Stills song. This one and the previous one, they all kind of remind me of the same other song that's a classic rock staple that I don't really like very much, but I hear it all the time. Taking Care of Business. It's got that same Taking Care of Business.
Yeah.
That kind of blues based, riff based song here. And that is what dominates what you were talking about, the first side of the album. It's that riff based song. Just the riff based sound. And maybe part of it's because in some of the quotes that I read from George, he said that they wrote a lot of the songs in the studio, and now this one wasn't, but a lot of the other ones were written in the studio, and so that's what happens. You're sitting around, you have a guitar, you have the piano, you just start playing things, and you come up with a cool riff, and you come up with a tune. So, yeah, that could explain it. But anyway, I call that the taking care of business sound here. So.
So that's pretty good. That's pretty good. I didn't catch that, but now that you say
almost
it,
identical.
I can totally see it.
Yeah.
We played "Give Me Back My Dynamite" to start the show. It's sort of a basic blues. Really great drums and guitars in it.
Yeah. That's a Harrison Troy composition.
Yeah, it's just Harrison just taking solo after solo.
Yeah.
Sort of atypical solos for him, too. It's just like ripping through kind of solos. So kind of a unique thing. Definitely worth a listen. This whole album's worth a listen just for this year. George playing great guitars. So an excellent basic track again. And one of the better... On the first side of the album's vocal performances, features are a little bit more.
Yeah.
That is followed with "You Tore Me Up Inside." Mm-hmm. What do you think? "You Tore Me Up." So we won't play that one, but
I don't know.
Sort of a gospel rock feel.
Yeah, it's got a lot of organ in it, if I remember correctly. Right? There's.
I put way awesome piano.
Lots of good keyboard work. I'll say that about the album too. It's with, again, you've got Leon Russell and Billy Preston and Doris Troy. A lot of great organ Hammond. You're going to hear lots of Hammonds and lots of gospel-y type organ in here. And I don't know. It's okay. It doesn't really strike me one way or the other.
So, well, I think that song would have been great had they just not put... They put all these backup vocals.
Sounds similar, yeah.
So it's a little too much backup vocals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why not just really feature her?
Right.
I don't get it. Now, the first song that I really, really thought was great was "Games People Play." That's a cover song, an old Joe South song. This song is very, very, very. It's not quite up there with "Yesterday," but it's been covered hundreds of times by a bunch of different artists. My personal favorite is the very swanky Mel Torme cover.
Ooh, I'll have to check that out. Yeah.
It goes da 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 dee da do stuff like that. This version sort of features, I think, what they were trying to get at with her, which is a gospel rock kind of feel. And it does feature vocals a little bit more, so.
And the tempo's a little different. It's not that same up-tempo, horn-driven sound. So it's a nice... Actually, I like that because it's a nice contrast.
Yeah, that's why I would have... See, had they started with your "Ain't That Cute" and then maybe had "Games People Play" second on the album.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that. Or any of these from the second half album.
Yeah.
Mix it up. It's just too much of the same. I've given up on it, and then they finally give me "Games People Play," and I'm like, "Oh, okay, that one's at least something different."
And that's the thing when actually Doris has a chance to sing, and the arrangement opens up so that you can breathe for a minute. then it's really powerful, and you can see, oh yeah, she actually does have a really strong voice. She's not swallowed up by everything else.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's, I like that one too. And that leads right into, we're back to the horn-driven stuff here as we continue after games people play. So we go to Gonna Get My Baby Back, which I think is kind of interesting just for the writing credits alone. Look, check out this here. You've got Harrison, Starkey, Troy, and Stills.
Wow.
So I think this must be pretty great. It must be kick-ass. We should hear it. Well, there's a lot of horns on that. There are a lot of stingers there.
Yeah. This is where, to me, it's like, whoa, too much of the same thing's really setting in here.
Mm-hmm.
And I just,
it sounds like she's having trouble keeping up, almost. It's just drowning her again in the arrangement with so much going on. There's a cool electric piano lick, though, that keeps coming back, which I do like. That's a good lick.
I will say that song, compared to all the other ones, is short enough.
Yeah, that's true. 2 minutes,
lively,
and 17 seconds. Yeah, it's short.
And if you pair that with the other song in the second half of the album, also written by that combo, which we'll maybe take a listen to. Not too bad. Not too bad. That combination of writers and playing these songs is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next track in the album, we won't play this one. future episode.
Yep.
Future episode.
Of Apple Scruffs.
Of Apple Scruffs, Jackie Lomax.
Yep.
We'll hear more from Jackie Lomax. This one's okay, but once again, super duper peppy.
It's called I've Got to Be Strong.
Yeah. Maybe a little too much going on this one. A little too.
Yeah. That's another one of those just very busy songs and very horn-driven again. Just too much of a good thing. I think you could space this out a little bit on the album and you wouldn't get so overwhelmed.
You know, the other day I had the TV on. I usually don't just have the TV just playing. And I think I had it on. So I was, I was watching a Cubs game. And the Cubs game ended and I went to the regular TV and they started showing the programs they were going to show that night. And it just is so loud and so just coming at me. And then it switched to the commercials and it was loud coming at me, loud coming at me. And then I just had to turn it off. That's kind of how I feel about the first half of this album.
Yeah.
We got 7 songs here. They're all so much going on, so much instrumentation, so much
stuff. Know, yeah.
Stuff, keyboards, 3 keyboards sometimes on a song. Too many background vocals, too much horns.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's not, you know, all well done, individually tracked.
Right.
If you had this in your CD rotation, if this was 20 years ago and your list still took the CD, but if you have this on your iTunes shuffle and any of these come up, you're probably going to be like, oh, yeah, that was pretty good. But back to back to back to back to back to back to back on the first side of an album, I think is probably why people, if they heard this album, were just kind of like, yeah.
Yeah, well, especially when the goal is to try to highlight and spotlight the singer, And yeah. yet the arrangements don't really allow that very well. So,
yeah.
But I think at least the second side, which is now where we'll start here with the song Hurry, I think things change a little bit more and now, a little bit better.
Hurry is a Doris Troy song. And she has sort of writing credit on most of these. But this one was one she had written way previous to this. And actually recorded previous to that.
Yeah, it's an old remake here.
So she's remaking herself, even though this is only her second album. So I'm like, what is she, Ringo? Maybe she gave Ringo the idea to just constantly remake your own song.
Could be.
I like the second side of this album. I think the second side of this album works
mm-hmm.
very well. And the Hurry has a different feel. It's a little more gospel.
Yeah.
A very unique kind of sounding song. Where this album really... the price of the album is worth it for this next song so far, which is Doris Troy and who... Who co-wrote this one with her?
Well, this is a surprise, but yeah, Klaus Voormann on the co-writing credits for this one. But I agree with you; it's pretty fantastic, and the way it's described on the Apple site here just says, "So far, written with Klaus Voormann, is pure gospel soul, highlighted by Doris's impassioned vocals." So I think we'll take a listen and see how that rings true. Wow, that's the one to download if you're looking to just get one track from this album. That's it right there.
Yeah. Well, it's finally what this album should be.
Yeah.
It's still great playing,
mm-hmm.
but it's background to her extremely very passionate vocal performance of a song that really has some emotional resonance to it. Definitely some strange. We were saying some classic odd George Harrison, not sure where it's going. Production at the beginning.
Oh yeah,
the changes just so strange. Yeah. But
the chord progression is definitely not predictable. I could tell. Well, I don't know. It could be Klaus being a bass player approaches things a little bit differently, and also being buddies with George. They were jamming and playing together, so definite influences there.
But this really, I mean, that...
When we were listening to it, you were saying the guitar just sounds different, too. It's not that taking care of business riff, blues, heavy, you know, gain, distortion on it. It's really clean and shimmery type sound, and...
Yeah.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah, my favorite track on the album, hands down.
Yeah.
I was so glad we did this just to discover that song.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I found myself just singing it in my head.
It sticks with you, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. So then, where do you go from there? Well, you go back to an old school song here. This is a song called "Exactly Like You," which is a remake of a show tune by the pair of Jimmy McHugh and Dorothy Fields, who wrote a lot of popular songs. And I don't know, what are your thoughts on "Exactly Like You"?
I think it's another good track. Great, another great vocal performance.
Yeah,
finally we're getting things.
Right.
It feels like we feel like we've drifted off into a different album, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. A better album. Maybe give me this track earlier, or this. Actually, I thought this might be a really good closer because it has this weird fade out. You know, if I have another qualm with this production, like it feels to me like they fade this out where they could have just let it roll. Mm-hmm. With her, giving some ad lib vocals towards the end, and just like give me an extra minute of this, but they sort of cut off the fun of that track.
It's pretty short, about 3 minutes. So they did kind of cut it down. Followed up by the aforementioned writing quartet of Harrison, Starkey, Troy, and Stills with a song title that I have to say it looks really stupid, but it does kind of it really sticks with you and it makes sense when you hear the song.
Yeah, so, you can't forget this one. Too.
No,
maybe not necessarily for great reasons.
No,
but you can't. And it is called "You Give Me Joy, Joy."
Another blues there.
Yeah, this reminds me of like you're at a street festival, and you happen upon there's a blues band playing.
Uh huh.
And they play this one, and this is the one that sticks with, gets everybody up dancing, sticks with you.
I can totally see that.
So pretty good. I like it.
Yeah,
I like it. It's lyrically pretty straightforward to say. Maybe Starkey wrote the lyrics.
Yeah, it's for some reason I like this one. Doesn't bother me. I like kind of like it. It's very catchy, and I like Ringo's dirty hi-hat on this one. It's kind of giving it a little bit of extra something, and the drums and the horns are you could see the horns at the the Lake County Fair or something in the background, right, on the main stage.
That's right. It's a little weird that Klaus Vorbit's at the Lake County Fair, but
yeah.
He's doing a great job, though.
He is. He's doing great. But it's all right. Yeah, I kind of like this one. So, yeah, of the blues-based ones that clearly sounds like it was written in the studio or on the spot, it works pretty well.
"Don't Call Me No More" is the next track. It's okay.
Another blues.
Very short. The one thing I do like about this whole album lyrically is Doris is sort of a empowering lyrics. A lot of love type stuff. But this one's her in control. Don't call me no more. Get out of my face.
Mm-hmm.
Basically. And sort of another song on the top. And when we heard Ain't That Cute, she's sort of like talking to society like, haha, isn't it funny how you guys, you know, think things are this way. Well, I feel differently, you know.
Yeah. Underestimating me or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So I do like particularly like that about this, you know, being an African-American woman in 1970.
Right.
That she's like really grabbing the mantle of the empowering black power kind of thing.
Yeah, that rings true through a lot of the album, and that's one of the great factors about it.
We got one more track here on the regular album proper. Now if you buy this, you're gonna get all the bonus tracks too, but the regular album ended with a traditional that was rearranged by Harrison and Doris. And it is called Jacob's Ladder.
So Jacob's Ladder, when I first saw that title, I was reminded of Bruce Springsteen on his album, The Seeger Sessions, that he did several years ago, recording all these traditional songs. He did this as well. Very, very different kind of sound.
Really?
I know it's hard to believe, but it's quite different than this version. But you were talking about empowering. I think this one's also very empowering in its kind of religiosity and... Yeah. And like very powerful, positive, you know, driving.
I like the gospel element. Gospel-y, this. I like 70s gospel music. I think they do that excellently here on this track. It reminds me a lot of Elvis's 70s stuff.
Yeah.
Fat Elvis.
Yeah. Fat Elvis, yeah.
Yeah. It's live performance type. Thing where he's got a band just cooking, and then he's singing his heart out, you know, in front of it. So it just sort of reminded me of the 70s Elvis a little bit. But I like this gospel kind of treatment on this. And once again, she just kicks ass vocally on this whole second side. It's like, oh, if you could have given the listener some of this in the earlier part of the album, I think people wouldn't have tuned it out. Or maybe even just a few less peppy tracks and a few You know.
Yeah, it's a good closer, and I think it fits the theme of the album pretty well. Sort of a side question here is, this is kind of the end of the album proper, but you were talking about 70s gospel type tracks here. Of course, a big one was recorded at the same time here of My Sweet Lord. It was done in sort of the same way, or Billy Preston's That's the Way God Planned It. That same kind of sound here. Do you see similarities to the All Things Must Pass type sound, since George was working out that at the same time? Do you hear that in this album or in this song, or the kind of religious type nature of it?
When they're doing this type of gospel, they're tapping in pretty well to what Doris wants to do. I think more so than the earlier tracks, the Ain't That Cutes and the You Tore Me Up Insides. I think the focus is on the music playing and not so much on Doris too much.
Yeah.
Not really capturing what does she do well.
Right.
You know, right. I think that Jacob's Ladder and the other tracks that had a little bit of a, well, maybe You Tore Me Up Aside was actually an example of one that they got right.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little more of her impassioned vocals.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I don't know.
I mean, because then as you said, you get these extra tracks, including a Beatles cover.
Yeah.
But the first one is a track that's, you get two versions of, actually, kind of a demo version or alternative, and then the real one. It's called All That I've Got, and then in parentheses, I'm Gonna Give It to You, and this is a Preston and Troy composition.
Oh, Billy Preston.
Billy Preston.
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. I mean, that was another one that I felt like sounded a little bit like the 70s Elvis group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's also a track, a version, What You Will Blues, that is another track of these bonus tracks that's sort of one of the earlier tracks, Give Me Back My Dynamite, but just without the vocals.
Yeah, a lot of George soloing.
Yeah, the vocals are just nonsense. So that's pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
But let's hear that Get Back. I mean, it's almost, it's foolish for us not to play the Linda McCartney thing to this. So here's her version of Get Back, which...
Takes a while to get going,
but we'll play it here for you.
Get back. Get back. Get back to where you once belong.
Certainly comes out of nowhere, doesn't it? Kind of kicks into high gear.
I was like, oh, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a real weird version to Get Back. Which, of course, you know, us being big fans of cover versions.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, ooh, is this going to be a all-time great?
Where is this going? Yeah.
Then they kick right back into what sounds like the rest of the album. So,
yeah, oh, yeah. And it's sort of... I almost, if you just weren't listening, you didn't know who it was, it had that Ike and Tina Turner sound to it. It was that same kind of feel of their Proud Mary cover. It reminds me of the Proud Mary.
That's a very good comp to this whole thing. If this show had gone on the road, it's a very Ike and Tina Turner kind of mm-hmm. that she's doing.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the biggest issue. It's a little Ike and Tina Turner. It's a little Elvis band. It's a little bit bluesy. It's not one thing. This whole thing's just a little bit, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and not. I don't think they know exactly what to do with her.
And that could be to go back to the question for this episode about why was, you know, with the star power. Why didn't it take off? That could be a big reason. Now, we've already talked about some of the sequencing problems on the album, that it was just too many of the same sound in a row that she gets swallowed up. But that could also be, too, it's too stylistically diffused, too many things going on. We can't really say who it is.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny because the album title is Doris Troy.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's who she was. I don't know. We don't know.
The other thing here is I've been saying they don't know what to do with her.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the real problem's the opposite. Maybe she, great singer, needed a little too much quote unquote help.
Yeah, a little more structure and production.
Your focus. They said in when she talked about right before the sessions that she wanted, I want to make sure that I'm involved in the writing of the songs and this and this and this. I just think maybe she didn't have a clear enough direction of what she wanted this album to be. And unfortunately, sometimes like this is probably a case of that. This was her biggest chance.
Yeah.
To become a big, big superstar.
Sure.
And it kind of didn't happen. She released a couple other albums after this. One called Rainbow Testament. Great album name there. And one called Stretching Out. And then she died at age 67 in 2004. She did stick around quite a while. And, you know, she very much contributed to those albums we were talking about in the 70s. So, yeah. So kind of a big thing for the 70s as far as a background singer goes.
Yeah, and that's kind of the case with a lot of these Apple acts, as we've found out. We started with the two biggest ones with James Taylor and Badfinger, who did have a pretty good amount of success. But I think now each additional Apple scruff that we talk about is going to be maybe a what could have been, or you know, things just the stars didn't quite align quite right to make things happen, even with all this stuff here, with all the factors in place. Yeah. And there's a couple of interesting, as we kind of sum up the album, a couple of quotes from critics that I thought were pretty good. Richie Unterberger of AllMusic says he bemoans the, quote, pedestrian quality of much of the material, saying that the heavy rock soul arrangements often have an over beefy early 70s super session feel.
Wow, well said.
It works best when Troy puts the brakes on the hard rock to deliver the emotional, slower soul tunes. David Cavanaugh of Uncut says that the album was in many ways a typical Apple LP. Some raunchy soul, some heavy Friends, and nothing too remarkable. Yeah, it's certainly interesting, and I've always wanted to know more about this album because of the star power and how it was put together.
Well, so, I got to say, for all of our, dissecting analysis of it, I'm glad that that I've listened to it several times.
Yeah.
I probably would put it on the back shelf right now. but so far is a great, great song.
Mm-hmm.
And I really love the bonus track that we're going to go out with. I think could we get a more appropriate end of episode song?
Yes.
but what do you give this as a rating?
Well, on our usual scale of 1 to 10, I'd probably give this one a 6.
I think a 6 is pretty spot on. Yeah. Could have been. It's just...
It could have been.
That's the problem. The way that guy from AllMusic said it, this could have been like... Had they just let her shine,
Yeah. Especially given all the gospel type quasi religious music that was going on at the time. I think Jesus Christ Superstar was really popular in 1970, 71 when it came out. And the gospel rock, Godspell, all that stuff was ripe for this kind of sound.
I remember, he just passed away very soon, Andre Crouch.
Oh, yes.
In the 70s.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember us having several Andre Crouch albums at the house always playing because it was sort of a religious house I was in. And I was like, ooh, Andre Crouch is great.
Yeah, yeah. That sound, exactly. Well, there you have it.
We have a lot of stuff sixes.
We are. We're kind of,
it's sort of okay.
We need something to just knock us on our you-know-whats here and...
Well, we gave New like a 9, I think.
That's true. That was pretty great. That was pretty great. And who knows, the big news now in the Beatle world that we're going to definitely be on later this fall are the 2 reissues from Paul McCartney that are going to be coming out, the Tug of War and Pipes of Peace reissues.
Did you see that those and all of his other extra special edition big box prices have gone down on them?
They have. The deluxe.
When they originally came out, some of those, they were like $100. Now they've come down to where most of them you can get them for $64, which is a little bit
interesting. Wink, wink.
being anyone who is related to me listening to this. Christmas present. Tug of War Pipes of... Well... It did tug of war.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
The piece, maybe not.
Well, yeah, I'm excited to talk about that one particularly because of all the Michael Jackson stuff. I wonder how it's going to be treated in that with the say and all of the relationships that they had and with Stevie Wonder and for Tug of War. But you and I both are big fans of Tug of War, and I think it'll be fun to see what Paul adds to it with the bonus tracks and the documentation and everything that goes around it.
Well, if you follow us on Facebook or if you follow us Twitter at I Got a Beatles, you probably have seen me post a few things for the Tug of War set. Please follow us on those things. You can always follow me at Chris D. Bragg on Twitter. I post a song of the night. I actually posted 4 different songs called Games People Play this week.
Oh, wow. In honor of Doris.
In honor of Doris. So it was pretty funny. And by this week, I mean when we recorded this weeks and weeks ago.
Yep.
But let's go out with my second favorite track on all of this Doris Troy thing, which is her version of Vaya con Dios.
So dark, the town is sleeping. Now the time has come to part, the time for weeping. Are softly ringing, and if you listen with your heart, you'll hear them singing. My love.